Hey, it's The Drop. Welcome back. This is RJ from Osiris. This week we are going to bring you an interview with Neil Casal that I did with him in DC when they were stopping through town on the Circles Around the Sun tour. We talked about his musical career and his influences and all kinds of other stuff. It's really fascinating. I'll say more about that in a minute. The Drop is brought to you by Cash or Trade, the world's only social network where you can buy, sell, or trade face value tickets. So check out cashortrade.org. Summer tours starting up. If you need tickets, just go to Cash or Trade. It's the best way to get tickets. And Osiris works in partnership with Jambase, jambase.com. Thanks, Jambase, for all you do for us. So before we get into the interview with Neil, I wanted to just spend a couple minutes talking about Osiris, because a few people have asked since we finished our investment campaign about a month ago. People have asked, so what's next? What are you guys going to do? What's going to happen? So I wanted to spend a minute on that. So we finished this campaign, we raised money, we hit our minimum goal, we almost doubled our minimum goal, so that's great. We're going to make a couple hires. We are going to put money into, you know, ad sales and marketing to help grow our brand and help grow our network. And then we have a bunch of really cool content coming as well. One of the main things we're going to do is launch what we're calling Osiris Limited. That's going to be short, sort of limited series podcasts with prominent musicians. So I don't have any that I can share right now, but I'll tell you that I've been in conversation, and Tom and I have been in conversation with several artists who are interested in doing this. And so one of our goals is going to be to continue to bring you original content with high profile musicians. Some of those might turn into longer term podcasts, but some of them might just be a 5 or 6 episode thing that the artist has been wanting to, you know, do for a while. Because the whole goal obviously is to bring music fans like you interesting and compelling content. So that's going to be one piece that we're going to be building over the next couple of years. Another thing we're going to be doing is called Osiris Original. We're going to be helping music related companies tell their stories. And some people might have seen mention of this, but we're going to be working with music technology company Splice to tell their story. And they're a music technology company. They're really amazing. They're growing really fast, and you can check them out at splice.com. But we're going to be doing a little bit of a deep dive, a few episodes talking about what they do, why they do it, and then interviewing artists that use Splice to make music. So that's what we're going to do. Osiris Original, we're going to do that with a lot of other companies, but we're starting with Splice, and that should come out later this summer. The other thing we're going to do is continue to do video and events. I'm sure everyone's seen the video version of The Drop, which is at youtube.com/osirismedia. Amar's been doing an awesome job hosting that, and we've had our friends Alan and Eric and Nick behind the scenes working on that, and that will continue. We also just launched our interviews series. Neil Casal was the first one, so you can watch that video interview on YouTube, but I'm going to play the audio for you today. And then we're going to continue to do new video series. So some topical stuff on cool things that are happening in music. We'll do artist interviews through the interview series. We're going to do a lot more video. And then in terms of events, we want to bring you as much as we can live podcast recordings, events where we bring people together. We're going to do one in Camden on the 29th at Tonewood Brewing, which I'm sure you'll hear about on the internet sometime soon, but 1 to 3 p.m. on June 29th. Go to Tonewood Brewing if you're going to be in Camden for the shows. We're going to do live podcast recordings. We're going to bring artists into events. We're going to do festivals. We have a lot more stuff that planned there. So the content, the video, the events, and then continuing to grow the business in terms of advertising and marketing and sales and sponsorships and all that. We have awesome partnerships with people like Cash or Trade and Jambase and a lot of others as well. We're going to continue to build those partnerships as well. So we are continuing to aim to position Osiris as the go-to music podcast network out there. And we appreciate your support and interest in helping us build this. And thanks for the people who have reached out and wanted to know more. All right, so now we're going to get into this interview with Neil Casal. It's a really fun conversation. He talks a lot about his musical history. And one sort of disclaimer, we got a couple of comments about talking about Ryan Adams in this interview. Neil was the guitarist for the Cardinals during this period of incredible growth and musical creativity. And we did agree before the interview, we weren't going to comment on Ryan Adams' personal situation. He does come up in his songwriting ability and his, you know, prolific sense of songwriting that has, you know, stretched over decades. And that's not meant to obviously discount any of the things that he's done. We don't condone in any way, shape, or form any of the things that Ryan Adams or anyone else like that has done. And here at Osiris, we're, of course, striving to create a more equitable music scene and a more equitable society in general. And we definitely do not condone any of the things that Ryan Adams has done or been accused of doing. And we also just, you know, we generally want people to be nice to each other. We don't want people to do disparaging, disgusting things. So I just want to throw that out there and let you know that we did think about that. And some of that did come through in the interview, but we made a point of sticking to the music and the musical creativity. So hope you enjoy it. We're going to jump into that interview with Neil Casal now. Enjoy. All right. I'm here with Neil Casal in D.C. Hey, Neil.
Howdy.
Thanks for joining us. We're at the first night of the Circles Around the Sun tour here at Gypsy Sally's in D.C. You guys put out, I think, your second album last fall or last August?
Last August, yeah.
And then you've been obviously playing shows. You're busy. You're on the road. Seems like all the time with CRB and Circles and other projects. How's this tour shaping up and what's like, how does this project shaping up after you guys did your second album?
Well, we'll see how the tour shapes up. You know, tonight's the first night. I mean, we did a leg of this tour a few weeks ago and it went really well, actually. It was like some of our first shows in the South on our own. And they went really well. And as far as the band, yeah. Recently, we're just starting to actually like play, you know, go on tours and do mm-hmm. runs. We would just do two or three shows or maybe just one offs here and there before. And it was really nice. But now we're getting to really play and become a band and start to refine this mm-hmm. thing mm-hmm. and really examine what we're doing. Because when we first started, it was like a bonus thing. You know, it wasn't, it wasn't intended to be a band. The original music we made wasn't supposed to even be released. So when all of those good things happened, it was like, it just felt like a bonus kind of vibe. So whenever we played, it was like, hey, it's great. Yeah. Whatever we do is cool, you know. But now that we're really like getting into the band more, we're starting to just work harder at it and look at the music and tighten the screws a bit. So now we're actually becoming a band and we have to really put the work in. So the beginner's luck that we had, you know, is now worn off and it's like, okay, you got to get serious if this is going to be something. But, you know, that said, our second record is, I think, better than the first, you know, and I really like the way it turned out. And that record was the beginning of this process now of like refining, improving, and turning it into something rather than it just being this like beautiful accident, you know?
Yeah. So when you guys went into the studio to record your second album, like you said, must have been a totally different approach. Did you guys take a different approach to like, I think you had maybe a couple of days to put together the first, the first stuff before in 2015, did you guys take a different approach or was it just like the same kind of vibe, but with more time?
It was a similar approach, except we took the Grateful Dead, direct references mm-hmm, out. Mm-hmm. Those references had to be there for the Fairly Well stuff, you know. We did it at the same studio with the same engineer, co-producer. And we just went in with the idea. We didn't really talk that much about it or rehearse much. It was just the idea was like, let's focus a little more, spend a little more time on it. Not a lot, but more than 2 days, you know, and like we're going to do some overdubs, not a lot, and we're going to mix it more carefully. So it was just this like honing process that started then. I mean, it's already been a year and a half since we made that record. And now we're taking that kind of refining process to our shows.
Cool. Mm. So I know you grew up in New Jersey, right?
I did, yeah.
So what was, like, when did you decide that you wanted to, like, play guitar? Was it, like, growing up, I imagine, in the 70s, 80s, and you were listening to rock and roll? Was it, like, I want to do this? Or did it come about, you know, more, I don't know, in a different way than I imagine.
Yeah. I have always been obsessed with music from the time I can remember anything. But actually playing it, I guess I didn't think that I could do it, or it was for other people or something. And my dad noticed that I loved music a lot, and kind of he encouraged me to do it. And once I got started, I never stopped. And that was it. I just never looked back, you know. In the 70s, I was listening to the radio and had my 8-tracks and, you know, my records. And I could tell you many stories, you know, that looked like the beginning of a music video, you know, right. When they show like the kid, you know, yeah. like discovering a record or something. Yeah. That was me like every week, you know, in the early 80s. And I started playing guitar when I had just turned 13. And it was Christmas time and I was a Rolling Stones fanatic, and my brother handed me a copy of Exile on Main Street.
Awesome.
And my dad handed me a guitar, and that was it.
Wow, that's awesome. It's cool to have, like, I know the stereotypical story is like, I wanted to play rock music and my parents were like, you gotta do something else. It's cool that you had that support to like, to keep following music.
Yeah, my mom was really worried about me. Her father was a musician all of his life, and he did quite well. He was a drummer. I never really knew him because I was too young, you know. Uh-huh. He passed away when I was very young. But I have his scrapbook of these amazing things that he did. He played in Cuba and Jamaica and in the 20s, and played all around New York in the city, you know, for decades as mm-hmm. a drummer.
Mm-hmm.
And had some incredible experiences and met all these people and have these, yeah, this scrapbook that he put together of beautiful pictures of all the things he had done. So I guess it got passed to me in some way,
yeah.
not directly. I never spoke to him about music.
Mm-hmm.
Or I just have a few memories of him. But the musical thing comes from my mom's side.
Mm-hmm.
She's been very supportive for a long time, but in my early years, no, she wanted me to be an airline pilot or something,
yeah.
something much different.
Something more predictable.
Yeah. And now I understand her concern. Now that I'm a bit older, I'm like, that might've been good. but my father, on the other hand, was totally supportive of my playing music. And, he said, you know, don't have a backup plan, because then you'll do that. So just absolutely go for it if you love it. So I took that route, and look where I am today.
Yeah. That's pretty amazing. That's good. I hope to be that kind of parent.
Well, he was cool. My dad, he was a Spanish immigrant into New mm-hmm. York City, and he was like, the American dream was actually like a real thing for him,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
So he had that kind of spirit of mm-hmm. like, go for it and don't be, you know, confined or shackled to old ideas and conservative ideas
yep.
or fear or those things. He had an amazing adventurism about him. And I think he really didn't want to see me just get locked into some life that I didn't want or enjoy or something. So that's where the encouragement came from. And I did have a genuine like passion for music, and he saw that and encouraged it. So he gave me he definitely gave me the license and mm-hmm. the encouragement to do it. I probably wouldn't have otherwise, because I was very introspective as a kid,
mm-hmm.
and very shy and mm-hmm. like needed help with direction. So
yeah.
When he saw the music thing happening in me. He said, here's a guitar, go for it if you want to.
That's,
you
know, awesome.
I'll back you all the way.
Yeah, that's really cool. And so I know you recorded your first solo album, I think in 95, and you've recorded like 10 or 12 albums on your own.
Yeah.
But I think what you're perhaps best known for is playing with Ryan Adams and the Cardinals and Chris Robinson Brotherhood and a lot of other bands. Just thinking about the guys you've played with, you know, some of these like brilliant, unpredictable, kind of out there people. Are you a whisperer of these kinds of like brilliant, crazy songwriters?
Well, I've been a collaborator and a partner to these guys, these types,
mm-hmm.
and it's made for a very interesting 20 plus years
yeah,
or so.
I'm sure.
Yeah. I don't know why these things have happened, or, you know, why I could see from the outside that it looks like a pattern, which it may very well be.
But you're clearly bringing things out of artists like that and helping them, you know, adding stuff to what they bring to the table.
That's true. I think it is true. I mean, in Ryan's case, it was definitely true. I mean, he never needed any help with his songwriting or his creativity.
Yep.
None of these guys, I mean, Chris or Todd Snyder or, you know, they're all fine without me, but, you know, I came into their lives at a certain point when, I don't know, a certain type of energy or collaborative vibe or, you know, whatever I bring to the party was useful.
Yeah.
Ryan and I had an amazing relationship, you know, when it came to playing guitar together and singing harmonies and we just had an incredible vibe,
yeah.
You know. And then the Cardinals I came into that band when it was really in shambles, and I did help unite that group and bring it back together. I was a bit of a shambles myself at that point, but so I needed them as much as maybe they needed me. But I became really good friends, instant friends with John Graboff and Brad and, you know, Cat Popper and at the outset, and then Chris Feinstein, of course, you know. And we became a unit, and we backed Ryan and everything that he wanted to do. And Ryan and I had met him so many years ago, and right from when we first met, we had this certain connection about things. So, you know, that was that. And I feel the same thing with Chris I have for years, you know? Yeah, totally. We're into the same music and kind of have the same goals and after the same thing. So, I just always just got on the bus, you know?
Yeah.
And they're just incredibly talented people. I mean, Ryan, we don't have to, you know, you don't have to talk too much about his talent and his creativity.
Yeah.
And Chris is the same way. Look at the songs that guy has written over the decades. And Todd Snyder is absolutely the same way. I mean, he's an astonishing songwriter. And I work with Cass McCombs, you know, who's another astonishing songwriter. Who am I missing? I don't know.
Well, you've collaborated with dozens and dozens of other people on projects and albums.
Yeah.
And that's, you seem to take a collaborative approach generally to music.
Yeah.
But your first several albums were solo.
Well, yeah. In the beginning for me, I've always been a band guy, especially when it comes to guitar. I've never cared for being the only guitar player like I am now in circles. But that's cool because I have Adam, who's really like another guitar player to me, and Dan too, because his bass playing is so active, you know. But the solo thing in the beginning was very important to me because I was obsessed with learning to write songs and to sing and the art of making records. I had a lot that I was working on that back then. There were like songs that had to come out of me, and I don't know, I had to find these songs, you know, and it was some kind of solo trip, which I don't think I was born to be a solo artist necessarily, because I don't have the personality for it. You know, there's a certain ambition and drive and like a desire to be in the, you know, to
like
be center
spotlight.
That's right. Which I am just not comfortable enough with to really make an entire life of it.
Yeah.
That's why I've gone down these other paths of collaborating with people, taking photographs. It's like it all becomes part of this bigger picture for me.
Yeah.
You know, but so being a consistent solo artist it's tough. I did it for a number of years, you know, and I may do it again. I mean, my friends are all pushing me to make another solo record, which, you know, I'd like to do. But as far as like being the man, that I'm not as good at. And the people that I work with are, you know, I mean, Chris is like the man, you know, one of the best front men you will find anywhere, you
totally.
Know, and we could go down the list. So I don't know, I guess in a way it's just some kind of like underlying psychological trips going on, you know, where like they have something that I I can support it. It's not like I don't want to be that.
Yeah.
But this is weird. It gets very subtle, you know?
But I have noticed, like, in CRB and with the Cardinals, too, I think you are, like, you're band leading a lot of the time, even if you're not fronting. Like, you're leading musically if you're not leading
lyrically. Yeah, I end up doing those things, not because I really want to so much. It's just, I just think about music all day and night. Mm-hmm. It never stops. I've tried to get it to stop, and it won't.
Yeah.
It really just won't. It's a problem, really. So I end up, you know, I guess I'm not trying to be the leader. I like it when everyone is doing it, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, I take charge sometimes, or I end up in a crucial role just because I do, you know?
Yeah.
But it's not, I don't want to dictate, that's for sure.
Yeah.
I just want to get it going. You know
right,
I mean?
Right, yeah.
I just want to get good things going.
Yeah, well, it seems, I mean, at least from CRB and circles and the stuff that I've seen, it seems like that works well. And your solo records, going back to the first one, are really, really good. And, you know, that it seemed like you had a good thing going for 6 or 7 records, but then you stumbled upon all these other things.
Yeah, I mean, the solo records that I made are... yeah, I was very intent on making something. I was aware even then of making something that in 20 or 25 years or however long would stand up and sound good, you know? So, like, recording quality and playing and musicianship and all of those things were, like, very crucially important to me even as a young person.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't out to have a hit or, I don't know, there was a different kind of success that I was... after, you know, I mean, I was just really into great records and discovering them all the time and songwriting. And I was just trying so hard to get it right. I don't know if I ever did. I think in there are certain songs, you know, that really stand up.
Yeah.
Others, I'm like, well, I don't know.
I kind
of missed the mark there, but, I was always like going for it. And I was writing a lot then, back in my 20s, and into my 30s, I don't know, however long. And I have songs now, but yeah, when I started playing with Ryan, that really like changed things. You know, that's where I became a band member, and then things just kept going from there, you know, and then CRB started, and that was the beginning of just an incredible era of creation and collaboration, and all these other things came from it, like playing with Filesh and, you know, Circles is an outgrowth of that. Hardworking Americans happened.
Yeah.
And working with Chris opened up, you know, huge channels for me. That's very important. You know, the amount of our relationship and that band and everything that we talked about and all the thousands of records that we listened to, you know, and Chris's kind of concept for that band and everything that we tried to roll into that band, psychedelia, folk and blues and R&B and hard rock and, you know, all these, and songwriting always and harmony singing, you know, it was everything from like the weirdest out there psych to, you know, the Everly Brothers, you know, so that was...
It's a good way to describe it.
It's true. And that's really like, Chris had that in his head. And I, the minute he said it, I was like, I know what you're talking about. Yeah. Let's do that, you know, definitely. Because I would love to do that as well. And we all, like, got down with that. So, I don't know, years passed, and here we are sitting here with these microphones.
With these microphones. So, you joined the Cardinals in, like, right after Cold Roses came out, I think. But you guys were still playing that and then recording and releasing more stuff. Cold Roses to me is like this ode to the Dead or Jerry Garcia. I think I'm not the only person who feels that way, but
no, I think that's true.
Did that or that period influence your playing? Cause now you're like a lot of your solo records were more Americana folk. And I think your music became more psychedelic and a little bit more experimental over the years. Is that like just the evolution of it? Or did those years with the Cardinals kind of change things for you?
It's the evolution of things, you know. I mean, I'd been into the Dead and all of those styles of music were nothing new to me, yeah, really, yep, at that time. I knew everything that he was speaking about. Well, I mean, Ryan turned me on to a lot of music too, because he's into whole other realms, you know, and I had some records for him, you know, that's what we all do for each other as friends and like co-musicians, and, you know, so have you heard this? Oh, check this out. Here's what I want to do. Oh, right. Let's try it, you know?
Yeah.
So it's just all like bending, you know, bend, like, we're just trees. Oh, let's go over this way a bit. What do you have? Yeah. You know? But yeah, Ryan opened me up too. You know, I'd never been in a band like that before. The two guitar thing that we had going was really strong, you know?
Mm-hmm. And you've described that period as like, you guys were really, I think you've said like, we were really on fire for a couple of years there.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, no doubt about it. I felt it, you know? I joined in what, like September of 2005.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was like right around the time that, 29 and like Jacksonville were coming out, you know. Cold Roses had been out
a little bit
since like May or something of that
year. Yeah, he put out three records that year,
right?
Which is
so
insane.
Yeah, Cold Roses, like, I remember hearing it earlier that year when I was on tour with my friend Jonathan Rice, and we heard that one. Wow, listen to this, you know, listen to these songs. And I'd known Ryan for years before that, but it was, you could tell it was like a watershed thing. And then I ran into him on the street in New York in front of Brownies and whatever it was, August or September. And he said, "Neil, I've been looking for you." Really? Yeah, I have. You know, we just, you know, JP's out of the band. Come over to my house and play. And I did. And that was it. You know?
Wow. I was going to ask how they came together, but that literally ran into him on the street.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Well, I'd met Ryan.
You knew him before.
I met him in 97 at South by Southwest.
Okay.
And because he was aware of my first record. Well, there's a guy named Jim Scott.
Okay.
He's a producer, engineer, whose discography is just mind-boggling. You can't even believe it. I mean, he engineered, you know, Wildflowers and all these Petty records, and he does the Tedeschi Truck stuff now. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's incredible. But Jim had produced my first record in 95, and then he produced Stranger's Almanac, the Whiskey Town record.
Yeah.
So I had met Ryan then because he said, "Oh, you're that guy that Jim worked with." So we got friendly. But anyway, yeah, I ran into him in front of Brownies in New York in 2005. And the minute we played for 10 seconds, it was like, this is happening.
Wow.
Well, actually, wait a minute. There was a rehearsal where he ran me through like 100 songs, and he kind of like was seeing if I could keep up, you know, and I made it out of there alive somehow. And then we were
super intense.
It was. Well, he's an intense cat, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah. And then like Brad and Graboff, we were like instantly friends too,
because
we're all the same kind of people. So, and then once that band, like once Chris Feinstein joined, it's nothing. I mean, Catherine Popper is a great bass player and was so crucial to the Cardinals. I mean, she's the original vibe, you know, but she was heading in a different direction, you know, even by the time I joined. And like once Feinstein got in, who she was good friends with, by the way, we were all friends, you know, but yeah. Once Space Wolf got into the mix and we got a couple months under our belt, it got really tight and we were making Easy Tiger at that point in New York, and we were working all, you know, in the studio every day. And Ryan hit another like high point in terms of his songwriting. I mean, he got onto another tear, and the great songs were coming like every day.
Yeah.
So, and then he had a great band behind him. He'd probably had some before that, but this was another level of band, and we were all pretty confident about what we could do, you know? So, 06, 07, 08, up until the end of it, when we had our nights, man, we were pretty unstoppable. And I'm not a braggart, but we were good.
Yeah, I caught two shows in a row in 07, I believe, one in Berkeley in like a theater setting, and then the next night in Santa Cruz at the Catalyst.
Those were
totally different and both amazing. And that was like, wow, this is like to switch gears, like in terms of venue and setup and all that, and play two awesome shows in a row. Seems
That was, yeah, totally. I remember both of those shows because that was a really good period. And, you know, that's where Ryan was. He was just totally fearless at that point. Mm-hmm. He'd do completely different shows and we could follow him. Mm-hmm. And like, it was just all working, you know? Yeah. And the audiences were there and it was all there. It was very good. I don't listen to those things anymore, but this kid recently, I was someplace and he said, "Oh, have you heard this show from somewhere in Germany?"
Yeah,
you know?
I know that show.
That one, Ludwigshafen.
Yeah, there's an amazing recording of it.
Right.
Out there.
Yeah. It's a very good recording. And I was in his studio and he said, "Have you heard this?" I said, "No. Do you want to hear it?" "No, I don't really." He said, "No, you really should listen, man. You should really just listen to a few minutes of this. You'll see what I'm talking about." And I, okay, fine. You know, we listened and I went, "Oh, wow, that's really good." And I actually, like, it came back to me what was great about that band. You know, it was loose, but it was together. It was a lot of things. And Ryan was just such a great singer in the songs. And Brad, everybody, we were just, it was a great time.
Yeah, you know? That's awesome. That's funny because that's the one show that I always go to and suggest to people. So,
yeah. Well, and really, too, what I noticed about that show, it's something that, like, it's very hard to hold on to as a band. Mm-hmm. Because once you know each other too well, it becomes like, it can easily become this, not formulaic, but I don't know, this locked in thing. But at that point, we were still like searching. You could tell that Feinstein didn't really know all the songs mm-hmm. perfectly yet. And it was like just barely hanging together. It was about to fall apart, but it was totally confident. It was that right, it was just that, it was in that right place between falling apart and exploding, you know? And like after a couple years, it's hard to keep that kind of spontaneity going. So that's what made that recording so good.
That's awesome.
This
is exactly what I wanted to ask you about. I mean, the Cardinal stuff is very fascinating to me.
I agree. You know, like I said, I don't listen to it. I have to keep moving forward. Yeah. But yeah, recently I've been thinking about it a little more, you know, and I worked with Graboff on something recently. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and it was really something. And just thinking back, it's becoming like 13, 14 years ago. Yeah. So there's this hindsight thing of like the theaters we played and the crowds and the touring. And it's just all, you know, we'd be locked out at Electric Lady Studios for weeks. You know, it's like, geez, that was pretty cool.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. So I know you probably have sound check and things to do. I'm fine on time. Okay. I have one kind of fun question, which was, I didn't know this before, but you did a voice coaching for Owen Wilson and Vince Vaughn and played some guitar around their like Starsky and Hutch movie.
Yeah.
How did that happen? And was that like as fun as it sounds?
Oh, it was totally fun. All those things came through George Draculius, who you should know who he is. He was a great record producer. He produced the first two Black Crowes records, the two really great, and in my opinion, best Jayhawks records in the 90s, Hollywood Town Hall. And
Jonathan
Tomorrow,
behind the camera is nodding. He knows.
You know these things, yeah. He's a little older. Yeah, I can. Yeah. It's a 90s thing.
It's a 90s thing.
Yeah. It's just, well, you laugh, but it's true. So George Draculius, and he produced an amazing Dan Penn record and an incredible Maria McKee record. Yeah. You get to work.
Yeah, I'm going to.
So George, through Jim Scott and this LA scene at that time that I was trying, you know, I was learning from Jim and George how to make records they're friends. And George does a lot of music supervision for films and he'd hire me for sessions and things for a while. So yeah, it came through him and he said, come and help these guys, get their vocals together for these movies. And it was great. It was easy. And I mean, the thing I learned from those experiences were I learned about comedy and comics and the truly great improvisers, you know, watching Vince Vaughn standing next to him in the studio. I coached him on some of the scene. Most of it didn't even make the movie. So,
okay.
But I coached him or whatever I did. I don't know why I didn't do much, but on this.
But you had to see this all happening too while you were coaching.
Well, the thing that was great was that I helped him sing this song, which was fine. But there was another part of the song where he had to improvise this whole long spoken thing. You know, that had to be funny, and there was music that had been made. So there was a very specific like beginning point and ending point to where he would start speaking and how he had to wrap it up and end it. And I watched him do, George made him do several takes or asked him to do several takes of this. And getting to see it, because I did the singing part and then I would just stand here while he did his spoken thing.
Yeah.
And like he did it so many times and it was different every single time and he improvised it and he knew right where to start and right when it was going to end. And every single one of them were funny.
Mm-hmm.
And it blew my mind to see that in action.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Different kind of improv than you were used to seeing in terms of music.
Yeah. Right. I've seen it in music and it was the same thing with like great comedians. They're just riffing and they're going off. It's like jazz or just any kind of improvisation. I'd never seen it on that level. So up close, and that was mind blowing. But, George got me, I worked on a few movies with him.
And, wow.
Yeah.
That's cool. So you're doing this, Circles tour, you're doing CRB in Europe and around the U.S. I mean, you have tons of tour dates coming up, but you also have like five or six other musical projects going on by my count. I don't know, maybe not that many, but it seems like a lot. What else are you going to do?
Well,
are you trying to keep it all going or do you have lots of other ideas you want to pursue?
Excuse me. I'm trying to keep it all going for sure. I mean, Circles is really becoming a big priority for us because we just want to see how far we can take it.
Yep.
And CRB has a new record coming out at the end of June.
Yep.
That's probably our best record. I listened to it the other day. It's another thing. I don't listen to our music much, but I got like the master and I listened to it. It's really good. And we have some US dates and we're going to Europe and then the CRB is going to take, I don't know, a pretty like long break or something.
Yeah.
So I'm going to slow down a lot after that. I recently produced a record by a guy named Zephaniah O'Hora.
Okay.
Who is a New York cat who has one record out already.
Okay.
Very, very good country in the best way, in the best classic, excellent way, outstanding singer, songwriter. And I produced a record that John Graboff plays steel on.
Oh, cool.
And Jeff Hill from the CRB plays bass on. And three other New York musicians. This guy, John Shannon, really outstanding guitar player who just blew my mind.
Mm-hmm.
And Arthur Vint, great drummer. And this guy, Roy Williams, great piano player, guitar player. There's an amazing scene happening in New York right now of just... stellar musicians. So
did you help bring those people together for him for the record, or were you just producing?
We're all kind of friends. Zeph had these John and Arthur and Roy. I didn't know them.
Okay,
he brought them to me, and I was just totally knocked out by those guys. And Graboff and Jeff were like, he knows them. Yeah. We both know them.
Yeah.
So we just talked about it all and kind of got this team together. And that's great. I'm really excited about
that. Awesome. When does that come out?
Either this fall or January at the latest.
Cool.
So, yeah, he has one album out already. It's called This Highway. Jim Campolongo plays on it and produces it. So Zeph's great, and it's nice to produce something and not even really play, just to, you know, help organize something and lead something and get it to where it, you know, needed to go. What else? I'm producing there's a few things I'm working on. So, yeah.
Is there some more attention and focus on Circles, it sounds like, for the time being with this year and maybe in the next couple of years?
Yeah, we are going to make another record late summer, early fall. Definitely going to push for that and see if we can write more interesting music and make more of this.
Yeah.
And that's about it. I'm going to play a little bit with Todd Snyder too.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it seems like you can't. Yeah. You don't really slow down that much.
Well, I do sometimes and go surfing a little bit, but the music is good right now. I think it's a really great time for music. We're in a really excellent era, I think.
Yeah.
So if I can, I don't know, make another contribution.
Yeah.
I would like to.
Cool. Well, I think what the stuff that's coming out of Circles and the other stuff you're doing is amazing. So thank you for all your contributions so far and keep them coming.
No problem.
And thanks for joining us. We appreciate it.
Anytime.
All right. We hope you enjoyed that interview with Neil Casal. We had a blast doing that. There'll be more of those to come as well. And again, check out our interviews series on YouTube, youtube.com/OsirisMedia. You'll see some of our interviews from Delfest getting posted. One goes up today with Sierra Hull, and we'll have a lot more for you. So thanks for tuning in. Thanks for listening. And keep the questions and comments and feedback coming. And we'll see you next week here on The Drop. And hope everyone has a good start to Phish Summer Tour and festival season and all that. And we'll see you all back here soon.